Picture this. You're standing in a living room, and there's this guy gripping a pair of pliers, literally acting as the local dentist,
Yeah, just pulling teeth right there.
right in the living room. And meanwhile, the rest of the town is crammed into that exact same room, all huddled around this battery-powered radio, listening to a Joe Louis boxing match.
Because, in 1930s Saskatchewan, if you needed groceries or a tooth pulled or just like a connection to the outside world, you went to Pierre Leroux.
Exactly. So, welcome to this deep dive into the source material documenting the incredible life of Pierre Leroux. Today, we are tracking how the 14th living child of Moise and Sophie went from, well, a wandering logger to the absolute anchor of a prairie community.
It's a huge transformation.
It really is. But he didn't start out as this responsible town patriarch, right? I was looking at his early years, and he seems way more like this restless rebel, like an action-adventure survival
Oh,
character.
completely. I mean, when you are the 14th living child on a busy ranch, you kind of have to fight for attention.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, as a kid, Pierre and his brothers actually snuck in and secretly carved the entire center out of Grandma Sophie's four-layer Christmas cake.
Oh no, just the center.
Just the center.
Yeah.
And when they got caught, the punishment was just brutal. They had to sit there on Christmas Day with completely empty plates and just watch the rest of the family eat the hollowed-out cake.
That is so ruthless. Wow. So did that rebellious streak, push him off the farm eventually?
It did, yeah. But the main catalyst was just pure frustration. By the time he was 18, Pierre had spent weeks stooking.
Which is lifting the wheat by hand, right?
Right, physically lifting and arranging these heavy, bound sheaves of cut wheat into teepees. He did this across 80 acres. And then a windstorm came and blew it all down.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he walked away. He vowed never to farm again.
Wait, so she just leaves, just like that.
He just heads to the salt mines. Then he goes to logging camps in British Columbia. He even manages to track down his parents' old mountain shack in Donald, BC, right in the dead of winter.
Okay, wait. Tracking down a family shack in the snowy mountains? I mean, that sounds like a romantic adventure novel. Was he just out there finding himself?
Not at all. I mean, the 1920s prairie economy was totally collapsing.
Right, the Great Depression is looming.
Exactly. Young men were riding the rails, taking punishing jobs, like, surviving 36 inches of Idaho snow or laying heavy railroad ties, literally just to eat. It was raw survival.
But he used those brutal years to forge this incredible physical resilience, which he definitely needed.
Oh, for sure.
Because when he marries Annie Lavoie in 1924, that survival energy shifts from just wandering to actually building, and he gets super creative.
Highly creative. I
Yeah.
mean, to make butter to sell, he actually convinced his dad to let him milk wild, unbroken cows.
Wild cows, that sounds terrifying.
It was. And then he started catching fish by the wagon load to sell for 5 cents a pound. He used his Uncle Paul's nets and this thing called a jigger.
A jigger.
Yeah, it's this clever wooden board with a lever.
Yeah.
You thread it beneath the ice to drag a net from one hole to another.
Okay, so he's wrestling wild cows and dragging nets under frozen lakes. How does he transition from that to, like, basically running a whole town?
Well, he physically moves his house to the settlement of Jackfish. Then he builds a store onto it. He becomes the postmaster, opens a pool room, and like you mentioned at the start, he becomes the local dentist.
His living room essentially became the central nervous system for a community totally cut off from the rest of the world. But running the only store during the Depression, that has to be a double-edged sword.
Oh, massively.
Especially since I read that 75% of the settlement were his own relatives.
Exactly. And that changes the entire mechanics of a barter economy. I mean, when cash disappears, people trade wood or eggs for flour, right?
Yeah.
But when three quarters of your customers are family, you can't just cut off their credit when they have nothing to trade. You can't let your cousins starve.
No, of course not.
So Pierre basically just absorbed their poverty to keep the community alive.
God, the pressure must have been suffocating. You're the mayor, the bank, the doctor, all at once. And it wasn't just the community weighing on him. His own family gets hit with a massive medical crisis in 1936.
Right. They faced five mastoid ear operations.
Five.
Yeah. And before antibiotics, an infection in the mastoid bone behind the ear, that was life-threatening. It required really intense surgery. And on top of that, Annie needed her gallbladder removed.
That's just wave after wave of medical bills.
It was. And to pay for them, Pierre actually had to sell his prize team of perfectly matched 1,800-pound black mares.
Oh, wow. Giving up those horses, I mean, that's stripping away his pride and his livelihood just to keep his family breathing.
It was a crushing sacrifice. But, his resilience was tested even further later in life.
Yeah, the late 50s were really dark for him.
Right, in 1957, Annie was diagnosed with terminal cancer, so they sold everything to move to North Battleford for her care. And while she was in the hospital, their 23-year-old son, Laurier, was killed in a freak power line accident.
Oh my God, that is awful.
And then Annie passed away just months later. It was just this staggering sequence of tragedies that would have broken most people entirely.
But Pierre somehow didn't close himself off. He rebounded. He actually went back to work as a warden, remarried a lovely woman named Lena, and, he became this joyful fixture at the seniors club.
Yeah, catching brook trout, playing cards. They even gave him the nickname Bingo Pete.
Bingo Pete! I love that. He made the absolute most of every hand he was dealt right to the very
He
end.
really did.
It really makes you rethink things. When you look at the quiet elders in your own family tree, sitting there with a gentle smile, maybe, playing a game of bingo, you have to wonder, how many hidden lifetimes of rugged adventures, quiet sacrifices, and incredible reinventions are sitting right there behind their eyes?